Hey guys, new podcast today. Early Thursday morning, Mark and I went on the road. I picked Mark up at like 6 o'clock. I don't think Mark's gotten up before 8 o'clock in like 10 years. But we went up and interviewed Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell. And I think it was fantastic. It's one of my favorite pieces that I've ever done with Matt Campbell. Mark's interview style works really well with him as well. This was a lot of fun. Before we do that real quick, I want to give a shout out to a business associate of Mark's and a good friend of mine, Ryan Grove. He's a realtor up in Ames. And he comes, you know, we talk a lot about real estate and business here on the podcast. And Mark personally recommends him. Mark doesn't do Ames. Ryan does. We have a ton of listeners from the Ames, Gilbert area. And we want to push that business onto him. Hunziker and Associates is the company he is a part of. Reach out to Mark at podcast at IA Real Estate on Twitter. You can reach out to me and we'll personally connect you with him. All right. You've all been waiting for it. Here it is, this week's podcast, finally, with Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell. All right, so the last time that the podcast, I believe, was officially on the road, we've done stuff at, like, the KXNO studios, and we've been around. We were in the Bachelor. You remember that guy?
Yeah.
Matt?
Yeah.
We were at his living room.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's big time. My wife would be fired up about that. She's a Bachelor addict.
We were at in Parkersburg hanging out with the Batch.
No, it wasn't Parkersburg.
Yeah, that's where he's from.
No.
Well, that
he went to Starmont High School, but it wasn't Parkersburg because I've never been to Parkersburg. I always wanted
to go. Applington? It's in that area.
It's Arlington.
Arlington, yeah. It's the same thing.
Arlington, Iowa.
It's the same thing.
That podcast didn't age well.
It did not.
So we
go from there. The next road trip is up to Ames to a very happily married man.
Not a bachelor.
Not a bachelor.
Not exactly a bachelor.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like a guy who, if Campbell here enters a crowd, the women come swooning. A little bit of Hoiberg-like.
Yeah, I don't notice that, so I don't know. But
no, I'm just kidding. You're not – You're not Fred Hoiberg, all right? Let's not get too big of a head here.
Well, let me tell you, Fred Hoiberg came in and spoke to our team, and I was mesmerized by Fred Hoiberg. I'm like, he started telling the story last year. It must have been right before fall camp or right during fall camp. And he tells a story about him guarding Jordan. And I'm like, our kids are on their seat, but I'm like, man, like I could listen to this guy talk forever. So, I don't think anybody will ever, you know, hold a stick to that guy in this area.
Yeah, no, I like what he's doing too. Mark asked me on the way up, like, what did you put it? Like, how many more years does he have? I think they'll be good this year.
Well, assuming it doesn't go well, how many more years?
So I don't think he'll get fired. But I'm a Hoiberg disciple through and through, so it would be really hard for me to say that.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for good things then.
Yeah, we're up here at we're in the coach's meeting room right now in the much-anticipated Matt Campbell podcast.
So it's funny because Chris is a seasoned journalist. That's what he does. I am not. I am yet a lowly real estate agent, and I don't do this for a living. So people like me don't get to see this part of the building very often. And I said, my first thought as I was walking down the hall is, this smells like cologne in here. You never walk into a store and it smells good?
Yeah.
That's what it smells like out there in that hallway.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Our DFO, Skip, you know, he's kind of got like the, you know, what's it look like? What's it smell like? What's it, you know, he's in charge of all those things that, you know, the superficial things that are sometimes important, sometimes.
You ever met Skip?
No.
You need to meet Skip.
Those first impressions matter, though. So if you've got the building smelling good, that's good.
You
got to
meet Skip and then just, like, because Skip's not married. He doesn't have kids or anything. And you can really, like, Matt's a Browns fan and a Cavs fan. But, like, at the end of the day, if the Cavs don't beat the Warriors, like, you're not really going to be affected by it.
No, but Skip will lose about a month's work from if it happens. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be tough.
You better be planning for that. That's going to be a tough road to hoe for Cleveland.
I tweeted at him after
It was after they won the other night.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, enjoy this while you can. It's going to be fun watching him in L.A. next year. And his response was something like, not even you can bring me down tonight. Or,
oh, yeah.
But it's just so much fun to just tweak at this guy about the Browns and the – Baker Mayfield, are you good?
Yeah, I'm still good. I'm still good. I know we talked on, you know, before the draft, but I am. I'm fired up. I think he'll do a great job, and I think him and Tyrod Taylor together, you know, is a really good package.
Are you nervous about the HBO thing?
No, I'm fired up. And give us something to watch during fall camp.
I'll watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's kind of my fall camp thing. That's one thing we do during fall camp is we'll watch the episodes of Hard Knock on Sunday night, you know, kind of give us away from everything else that's going on. So the Browns being on, I'm going to be fired up to watch
them. Yeah, all right.
What's it like to be a Browns fan? That's got to be terrible.
It's been a tough life. Now, yeah. Growing up, you know, one of my best memories, they were decent, you know, when I was in elementary school. And so it was like Webster Slaughter and Kozar and that group of guys. But, you know, some of those bad, the fumble and the drive and all those things that happened to us. So my dad, I think I'm in third or fourth grade, and you know, back then, I forget what it was, rocking like their Reeboks or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd spray paint because they would spray paint their shoes orange. So during the playoffs, I spray painted my shoes orange. And remember, my dad went to the Denver game out there where they got beat, and he was at that game in the playoffs. But yeah, avid fan, but tough. You know, and in Cleveland, it was crazy because then they left, you know, and so it's kind of weird.
I always wonder, because the Vikings were the team that, like, they kept having a gun to their head, like, oh, we're gonna move the team to L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, that went on for like 20 years with the Metrodome.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said, if the Vikings would leave, there's no way I would, like, just follow that franchise and root for them. And I would have just become a Cowboys fan because that's who my dad liked. So when that happened, like, did you root for Baltimore or did you despise that team? How did that work?
I think you despised it. I know I did because it was like I think there was not – the difference was there was no rumors. It was just, bam, it happened out of nowhere, you know. And I think I was in, gosh, probably right around high school when that went down. So, you know, you're in such a different element at that point where you're really rooting for a pro team. But that was really weird. But it was more a despise of, obviously, the owner and that whole thing. And now as you grow up and you learn some of the nuances of it, you know, but I was a big Ozzie Newsome guy. I played tight end. I loved Ozzie Newsome. You know, he was had been the great player, and now he was on the staff and then obviously becomes the GM. So, you know, I was still a fan of him. But, that was tough. That was tough. It was like you weren't even watching pro football. To be honest with you, you know what it did for me is it kind of made me for a while lose my love for pro football. It was like
I get it.
Yeah, you know, and just turned my attention to college sports or, you know, but pro football was kind of like – I'm not even watching it on Sundays.
Especially a place like Cleveland, too. Like there's certain cities like L.A., if they lose a team, most of the people, like, just move on.
Right.
Like, I went on a trip to San Diego this year, and my wife was working, and I was just bar hopping. But I talked to a ton of locals, and, like, there's still, like, the sting of losing a team in San Diego, like a small town like that. And then Cleveland, it's just like, what? Like, you have your sports.
It's pro sports.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what kind of, you know, that's what energizes that city, and especially through some tough times over the last 20 years there. You know?
Yeah, exactly. But Detroit, similar.
Detroit, so similar. You know, obviously living in Toledo for as long as we did, like – very similar cities in that regard. But, it was interesting. The only thing that got us through it was the Indians started to get really good, mm-hmm. the mid-90s. And so, you know, and I'm a big Indians fan, so that part at least got me through it.
I apologize for my Cubs beating them the other
year. That was tough. That was tough.
But that was another great, like, vintage Skip moment because you guys are just getting here.
Yep.
And, like, it's Cubs mania.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, even if you're a Cubs fan, you're interested in it because mm-hmm. the lovable losers thing. And then you had Skip, like this new ops director in town, and nobody really knew who he was.
Yeah.
And he's like just trolling Cubs fans on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I loved it because I didn't care. I'm not a Cubs fan. I thought it was fantastic. But Mark, Skip was like in the background. Like, and he was so annoyed with all of you Cubs.
I apologize. This wasn't my intention. All right, Coach, enough fluff. We got to get to a serious question here. All right, Chris knows what's coming. He's okay with this one.
This is probably – of all the dumb questions you're going to get asked this offseason,
this is the most stupid.
This is the most important question you'll be asked
for
this program.
So this is a question that's been in the making for 3 years. We've been doing this for 175 episodes, 176 episodes.
Yeah.
All right.
So we've got a lot of listeners who want the answer to this question.
Awesome.
Because we've talked about it a lot. The day that you were hired here for your press conference, I left you and your kids a gift. Mm. Did you get it? That is the question.
Well,
it was left for you at the front desk.
Now, what would have been, Eric, and I can tell you at least have some remnants of remembrance of what the heck was it?
So the reason the short story behind it was there's a famous real estate agent in Ames that likes to introduce herself to coaches at their press conferences.
Okay.
And I said to myself, you know, just once, because I work in the same industry, I'm just going to see what happens. So I went to either Target or Walmart or something. Got a gift bag, bought a few gifts for the children, like video game type console things, whatever. Brought it up here. There was a young lady at the front desk, and I said, hey, would you mind giving this to Coach or his wife later today? And she said, absolutely. And then she put it under the desk. My theory is she sold it on eBay. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it's true, but so I told this story on the podcast, and people say, well, did he ever get the gift?
You said, told this like the day after the press conference.
I said
that you were up here hawking gifts onto the campus.
I said, I have no idea, but it was just, hey, welcome to Iowa State.
Yeah.
This is what I do. I hope the kids enjoy the gifts. I think she probably sold the stuff or took it home.
Well, I will tell you this. I don't remember that, and for the most things that I did get or got early on, I tried to write a thank you note to everybody that sent something in. You know, but I will say it was mass chaos. You know, you got to remember, I'm hired. We played our last game on Friday at Toledo.
Yeah.
And
I watched that game because I thought you or Fleck was getting the job.
Yeah.
So
you watched it.
I actually thought it was going to be Fleck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was familiar with you because we had played you and all that stuff. But I remember that Friday morning sitting there and watching that game intently.
Well, you know, from our end, I'll take you through that whole deal. You know, we play Friday, and I'm livid. You know, it's a monsoon, the game we play in. It's an absolute downpour. It goes right to the end of the game. You know, there was a call that kind of went against us. There was a targeting call. We lose the game.
I remember that.
Late,
yeah.
And I'm devastated. And, you know, I don't have an agent. I've got a buddy in town at Toledo that kind of had handled any distraction of anything. And
I'll handle that from now on, by the way.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I know a lot of people.
Yeah, fair enough. And so, my big thing was I'm not leaving, and I had really no interest in leaving. And it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, and I'm still at the office. There was a kid that gotten hurt. I went to the hospital, sat with his family, went back to the office, and I'm livid, you know, just from the game and just kind of how I am. And my wife's like, hey, listen, like, everybody's trying to get a hold of you. Like, what are we doing? Like, you got to make a decision. And so the one gentleman said, hey, the athletic director from Iowa State is in town. He wants to meet with us in the morning. So we went over to this guy's house. We talked about everything. And I'm just like, no. And Erica's like, my wife's the one. And she's like, well, maybe we should just meet with this person. He came into town, and, you know, it's you know, the right thing to do. So literally go with zero intent. 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, we get a babysitter. And the smart thing that Jamie did is he met with my wife and I. And, you know, I was like, gosh, this guy wants to meet with my wife. Like, what the heck's this about? So I figured it was like, hey, just say hi. And she was going to leave. And I was like, well, we'll be home in an hour. Like, this will be – you know, this isn't going to take very long. So 4 hours later, you know, we get out of the conversation. Erica is with me. And, you know, fast forward then 24 hours, we're on a flight to come out here to Ames. We land, you know, at
Mark,
that time.
Mark delivers the gift.
Yeah. Mark delivers the gift, which would have come in. I'm telling you, Mark, here's the deal. That would have been huge because the reality for us would have been we had, you know, the Campbell girls who'd had no idea what was going on. Rudy was small. And then my wife was she's 7 months pregnant with Rocco. So she would have appreciated it. I'm telling you, if we would have got those gifts.
So what happened to the gifts?
I think they went on eBay, dude.
I don't
know the young lady that was at the desk. She's probably not still at that front desk. But, you know, I don't know.
I'm closing the book on all the projects I have for this summer. Investigative Journalism 101. I'm going to find these gifts. Anyways, I thought you were taking the Missouri job. It because there was like a Sports Illustrated report or something like that. It wasn't like what I was hearing. And so then, like, I'm a coaching silly season nut.
Mm-hmm.
Something sick about me, and I don't know why. I'm more interested in the stories outside of the games.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I'd play the GM mode on my PlayStation more than I wouldn't actually play. It's just how I am. I thought you were getting Missouri, and I thought Fleck was going to end up here.
Yeah.
Is how that thing played out.
You were wrong.
Yeah.
Chris.
I'm glad I was wrong.
Well, and I'll be honest with you. You know, I
don't think Fleck would be sitting here doing the podcast. I just have a hunch, but
you know, my
he would have come running into this room. That's what he would have done.
He would have. Yeah. He would have. Yeah. You know, it was really hard to leave, to be honest with you. You know, I think we met that Friday night, and there was, you know, a bunch of schools that had reached out at the time and, you know, just said no, no, no. And the only one that we said yes to even talking to was Jamie. And, you know, I think there were four or five different things, and I just said there's no way I'm going there. And we loved Toledo. You know, we had been there. We had built that program to get to a really great place and really loved our kids and the players in the program and thought we had a great thing going. So, you know, I always said it would take the perfect thing to leave that program. And, you know, some people think it's about money, some things about that. But to be honest with you, it really had to be a great fit because we really love what we had going on there.
You had a quote, I think it was a Tommy Burch article, where you talked about Toledo, and you said that you were totally content to stay at Toledo for the rest of your life, which is not your typical what people think of, the way coaches think.
Yeah.
It's always the next step, the NFL, whatever that might be. Do you think you would have taken the Iowa State job if you had not played a game at Iowa State?
Yeah, I think it would have been really hard, honestly. You know, and the only reason I say that is at least I had an understanding of what Iowa State was maybe from the outside looking in when I got here. And you know, that is real. When we came here that day, I had zero expectations. And, you know, we had played that year at the Swamp. I think we opened. And, you know, part of me was kind of like, when you're a mid-major school and you got to play two Power 5 schools in the same year, that's frustrating sometimes.
Didn't
you
almost win that game?
Well, we did. We didn't win it, but we almost did. We played well down there.
And then you beat Arkansas the one year. Okay.
We did that the following year.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was one of those situations where it's like, man, you know, you just didn't have any expectations coming out here. But whether it was homecoming or whatever it was just an electric environment. And I'm one of those guys, and I still do this, like, I don't want to sit in the locker room before the game. I have zero interest. So I like to go walk around, especially at visiting places, because I want to see what's their environment, what's the game day. I like that aspect of it. Like, what are, you know, what's going on in the stands? What are they building around the stadium? And so, you know, that day I'm walking around, and I remember walking, you know, I guess which would now be the home side, on in the concourse and watch the Spirit walk. I was like, man, what an unbelievable, like, setting here.
Yeah.
And so I think that helped, but I think the biggest thing for me was really Jamie. And, you know, I've always been a big believer in something that I think my dad had instilled in me about, number one, like, never worry about the next job. Like, I remember being a GA at Bowling Green and six weeks into the season, our video coordinator quits. Like, I'm not sleeping there. You only had two GAs. And I'm like, I called him. I'm like, man, like, this is wild. And he's like, listen, that head coach hired you for a job. You do the best job you can. You don't worry about anything else. And because that guy's butt's on the line and you do as good a job as you can, and the rest will take care of itself. And it was really, that's resonated with me no matter what job I've ever had, not worrying about whatever's next. But the reality for me was, you know, sitting down and talking to Jamie, what was his core values? Not even so much as a department, but who he was as a person. You know, four kids, his family, family was important, you know, kind of going through that. And those things are, I love football and I love creating program and building, but I still love my family. And I that part's really important to me too. And, you know, there are a lot of things that just really resonated in terms of values. And I think that as much as anything, and even leaving that meeting, like, it was my wife that turned to me and said, like, how can we not go here?
Yeah.
Like, and to be honest with you, I was shocked because, you know, we're in Ohio. We've never left the state of Ohio. Her parents, grandparents were at every football game that we've ever coached. We had instant babysitters. If we needed somebody, they drove up. You know, my dad missed very few football games in my career. And then all of a sudden, we're picking up and we're moving, you know, at least a good portion away, where that access into those people that had been such a huge piece of our life, you know, aren't there anymore, or is at least consistently there. That was a big change, and she, it shocked me, you know, but I she's got a great sense of character and fit, and, you know, I was, you know, I was a little apprehensive that Jamie had asked her to come to that meeting, but at the end of it, I was really grateful that he did. And you know, I think we both look at each other, and we've said this multiple times since we've been here, man, this feels like home. This could have not been a better decision for us to grow up and to raise a family than what we've been able to do.
You said, you mentioned it was a four-hour conversation. If you had to point to one thing, the most important thing that Jamie talked about that day that got you the most excited about taking the job, what was that one thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if it had much to do with the football program itself, other than it did that Jamie had talked about kind of what Fred had done with the basketball program. And, you know,
it all comes back to Hoiberg.
Yeah, it does.
Every time.
It does. And, you know, I for me, it was the ability to do something that maybe hadn't at least been done in a while, and to build something. And that's one thing I do have a passion for, and that's something that I do love. And it was probably one of the things I didn't feel like at Toledo. You know, I felt like I was always trying to fix maybe what I didn't get the opportunity to start from scratch. You know, I was the offensive coordinator for the first 3 years. And, you know, even though I felt like I was kind of in charge of like half the team, it wasn't, you know, and so I was like, gosh, you know, that was probably the one thing that really excited me is that we got to start from scratch and build it the right way.
That's awesome. The you might – I think you've admitted to listening to the podcast a time or two before. So
I'm sorry.
you know that we occasionally like to play some games. So I know Chris and I have got some more questions for you. But
we're going into the games
already? No, we got a few. So I want to break it up a little bit if we can. Okay. This is the only chance I'm ever going to get to do this in my life. So here we go.
All right.
Chris, you can help coach with this. This one involves both of you.
So this is like a team we're answering questions.
Yeah. All right.
Good.
So couple of great minds.
All the games are meant to be a little bit short, but here's the first one. The title of this one is Big 12 Coaching Trivia.
Oh.
You ready?
I'll need your help.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
How well do you guys know the other Big 12 coaches?
So this isn't like history?
No.
I feel like historically
there's a little bit of history, but not much.
Okay,
ready?
All right.
Okay, which coach am I talking about here? This coach attended Mule Shoe High School in Texas.
So it's got to be a...
The answer to these is they're all Big 12 coaches.
It's not Rule because he's not from Texas.
Is Gary Patterson from Texas?
I don't know.
Your hint is he's a younger coach.
It's Kingsbury.
Yeah, it's got to be.
It's Kingsbury.
You guys are wrong. It's Lincoln Riley. Went to Mule Shoe High School. Correct.
Okay, all right. That's my bad.
Question.
I was positive that was Kingsbury.
All right, here's a history question. Ready? Which coach backed out of a commitment to play football for Barry Switzer?
Which of these guys are former players? Was it Gundy? Because he played at Oklahoma State.
Well, you got to think that Gundy, that would be Gundy's time. You know, I'm going to go. Let's go with Mike Gundy.
Mike Gundy is correct.
Yes.
There you go. You're one for one.
He said toughest phone call he ever made. His dad said you have to call the coach and let him know. So he called Barry Switzer.
And that's interesting because at that time, like, Oklahoma would have been really good, and Oklahoma State wasn't much of a program, were they?
I'm not sure what the connection
was. Was Oklahoma running the triple option, though? Were they still doing a little bit of that?
I'm not sure.
It might be.
All right, here you go.
Maybe that's something to do with it.
This coach is an accomplished guitar player and performs at charity events.
Gary Patterson.
Gary Patterson is right. Has he played for you?
He has not played for me, but I remember watching that, some specials of that.
Okay.
Pretty impressive.
All right.
Wayne Morgan used to do that around here.
Coach,
do you even know who Wayne Morgan is?
No.
Old basketball coach.
He's the basketball coach here after Larry Eustace and before Greg McDermott.
Huh.
And he would, like, if you would just show up at a random, like, bar in North Ames on, like, a Tuesday night, he'd be up there playing. He'd be up there on the, like, stage playing his guitar.
I feel like that'd be a good, like, recruiting tool, you know, if I could. I can't do that, so that's maybe I got to – Skip. Skip's got to do it.
I kind of like that. Okay, so this coach is a member of Mensa.
Oh, gosh. We've all heard it a million times.
All right, there you go. Tom Herman. I figured I'd throw you an easy one there.
He would always, like, when he was here
– talk about it.
Well, like, Herman, like, couldn't just answer your question.
He'd go deep.
He'd, like, quote Einstein and make sure and tell you about it, that he was quoting Einstein, and then he would move on.
Yeah. All right, fine. That was your that was your slam dunk. Here's one that has really not a lot to do with the player, but I found interesting. This coach's father won a Purple Heart in the Vietnam War.
Well, it clearly wasn't Bill Snyder.
Nope.
Would it be Matt Rhule?
Rhule, Beatty would be one of the – I don't know.
Do we have an official
answer?
Let's go Matt Rhule.
The answer to this is Cliff Kingsbury.
Wow.
His father did.
We're way off on Kingsbury.
That's okay. All right. There might be more than one answer to this, but this is what I went off of Wikipedia. This Big 12 coach has a Super Bowl ring.
Oh, that is Rhule.
That's Rhule.
Yeah.
New York Giants. Yep, absolutely. Good job, coach. This coach played college football in Iowa.
Oh, gosh, I know this.
Do you want the school?
I'm trying to think of who's left.
Iowa Wesleyan.
Oh.
Was the school.
That's where Leach used to coach.
Well, it's West Virginia. Holgorsen.
Yeah. Holgorsen. Dana Holgorsen. Good job. All right, two more. This coach got his first.
Timeout. That'd be a really great deal. Like, I'd love to talk to somebody from Wesleyan, like, when Leach was around.
You know, Dana Holgorsen would be really good on the fall cast. He'd be a good fall
cast. I need to talk to him down in Dallas about just Leach being in Iowa and all that stuff. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay.
This coach got his first assistant job at USC.
Bill Snyder?
Bill Snyder.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it was like in the 1920s. I mean, it was a while back.
Man. Good pull, Mark.
Yeah. Okay, that's Chris, good. This last one's for you, okay? This coach has two conference Coach of the Year awards, 3-1 bowl record, and turned down the New England Patriots for a possible job.
Turned down the Patriots for a possible job?
Yeah. This is all according to Wikipedia.
He's a current Big 12 coach?
Correct. Two conference Coach of the Year awards.
In the Big 12?
3-1 bowl record. Turned down an opportunity to talk to the Patriots about a job.
Who do we have left?
Only a couple.
Who's Beatty left, and it's not him. And you know that there's people screaming at their smartphones right now.
Yeah.
Trying to think of who's left.
Coach could probably help you with this one.
Yeah, I would have to say Matt Campbell.
Matt Campbell. How do you not know this, man? Maybe the Patriots threw you off. Is that a true story? It's on Wikipedia.
Honestly, what threw me off is he's sitting here, and it's like I didn't think that you were in the pool.
Right. I get it.
That's what threw me off.
Yeah.
So as Beatty and Campbell were the only two left.
No, because Beatty's Wikipedia page had nothing on it. There was no trivia.
I am a staunch defender of Dave Beatty. I really think that guy, like, I don't know enough about the X's and O's to be like, oh, he's a great, like, defensive mind or anything.
Yeah.
But that guy, like, fires me up. I love listening to him talk. I feel like he could be a good recruiter.
Yeah. Well, I think he's done some decent recruiting. You know, I'll be honest with you. We thought after playing them my first year, going into year two, you know, for us, I was really D-line-wise, O-line-wise, I thought they had some really good pieces. And, yeah, there were one kid gets drafted last year. You know, they've got an outstanding couple guys on the defensive line coming back, great linebackers. They've got some good pieces. So,
well, and he took over, like,
tough
like
circumstances.
They only had 50 scholarships that were usable at the time, I think.
Right.
Like, people don't factor that in when they're just wanting to fire guys.
The whole picture. Exactly right.
So what made you, off of that question, again, assuming Wikipedia is correct, you had a chance to go work at a pretty amazing NFL
Belichick
program.
Offered you a job?
So, you know, this is a unique story. Our first year as a graduate assistant at Bowling Green, we had a really good quarterback. I don't know if you guys would remember the name. And we had everybody coming in. And Josh Harris was his name. He's from Columbus. He kind of revived the program with Urban. It's his senior year, and we have GMs coming from all over the place coming in. Well, nobody wanted to deal with them, so part of my job was, before practice, these GMs, these scouts came in. My job was to get them set up with film. And the one guy that I met was a guy named Scott Pioli. Well, Scott Pioli, we learned, goes on and
went
to the Chiefs, and now is in Atlanta. And so I got to meet Scott, and at that time – you know, Belichick really doesn't give a GM title to anybody, but he was a sense the de facto GM there. And so got to talk a bunch, really hit it off, and he comes back again. And I remember he was trying to get to the Detroit airport, something, and he needed, and I was like, yeah, I'll get you a script for practice. I'll help you with whatever I can. So he calls me, and we hit it off because Josh McDaniels is from Stark County. His mm-hmm. dad was a head football coach. My dad was a head coach. We kind of know each other a little bit. So, you know, we hit it off with that relationship. And, you know, he called me probably after the season. And I know it was after the season. It was in March, and I was back home. My dad was still a principal, and I'm going to a track meet. And to see him that night, and he calls and says, hey, I'd like to interview you for one of the jobs here in New England. And it was like, gosh, I just got to Bowling Green. It was my first year GAing. I had an unbelievable experience. We were good. We played in the MAC championship game. And it was like, I really like coaching, you know, and at that time, you know, and really kind of how Belichick does it, you go into personnel, and then personnel, you know, you can go onto the field. But I don't think I knew that at the time. And I was just like, I remember being conflicted. I called Coach Karras. I'm like, should I go do this? Like, I feel like I'd be letting these guys down. And at Bowling Green, the one nice thing that they had done for me is that going into my second year, they had moved the tight end coach to defense and were going to let me in the spring and the fall coach the tight ends. And I'm like, gosh, this coach, like, he sacrificed a lot to help me out. Like, I feel like I'd be leaving him hanging. So, you know.
Wow.
I called him back and just said, I really appreciate the offer, but, you know, right now I'm going to stick with what I'm doing. And I think a lot of people were like, even Coach Karras, I mean, he's like, man, you're crazy. He's like, you should go take a look at
that. It kind of sounds crazy to me.
Chance to be with the hoodie?
But, well, and I, believe me, there's no bigger fan. If I had a second team, I like the Patriots because I'm a big Belichick fan of how he does things. But,
what do you think? Is Belichick, have you followed, like, keeping the guy out of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, like and I'm fascinated by
the backlash with the players, like, allegedly and stuff.
Yeah, like, what's really going on there?
Yeah.
And is part of it just a setup? Because, like, part of it, you could feel like this guy and, like, Brady are, like, setting everybody up too,
yes.
right? So who knows what's really going on?
I think the coach wanted to win. Why would a coach not want to play his players and win the game?
Something happened there, right?
Yeah.
Like, something happened.
Yeah, that's nuts.
You're right, Mark. I mean, like, it's the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, I get Belichick playing mind games with people.
Right.
It's kind of what he does.
That's not a mind game.
That's a win the game type deal.
Yep.
And let's be honest, they almost won the game. You know, it's not like it was a blowout one way or another.
Yeah.
So
You could be in Belize with Tom Brady and Giselle right now if you'd taken that job. You could have been
best friends.
With them. I got one football question for you.
Yeah.
Nobody wants X's and O's on this thing, and this isn't really one of those questions.
We want to know where the gifts went. That's all we care about.
Yeah, I want to know where the gifts went now too. I'm on it. That may be part of my daily.
We need an independent special counsel.
We're going to track down the girl. Who
you know what we should do before you know,
that time,
you know what we should do before we leave this building today? We should look behind that desk. They could still be
still
sitting there for all we know. Okay, so let me give you a game scenario, and obviously score matters, time of the game matters. Let's say it's 4th and 3. And you're at your opponent's 38-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Coach calls the punter out there to punt.
Timeout.
Yes.
What's the score? Time and
it's a close game. We'll just say it's a close game, and we're in the third quarter.
Okay.
Third quarter. Close game.
There you go.
I'm going to speak on behalf of the fans. That move drives them nuts. Okay? They want more of the approach of the high school coach in Arkansas.
They want to go for it.
His philosophy is we value the ball.
Flea flicker.
We want the ball, okay? Now, worst case scenario, the ball goes in the end zone, and you've gained 18 yards
right.
in this case. Tell me why that's a good move in a football game to not go when you only need 3 yards.
Yeah, I think it's all tempo of the game, pace of the game. You know, we've lived that sometimes even since we've been here. Nobody likes to go for more on fourth down than I do, to be honest with you, but – I think sometimes in a game where your defense is playing really good football and, you know, the opposing offense is struggling and your own offense is struggling, that field position becomes the absolute critical piece of the flow of the game, you know. And that's where in a situation there where field position is the key to success that, you know, you really think about on your own 38-yard line, man, am I going to punt this ball, punt them deep, get good field position, let these offensive guys come regroup, and then, you know, come out and come with a better opportunity or a better plan the next time. So I that's a great question, and I think it's all flow of the game and it's all feel of the game, you know, when that happens.
So it's gut feel for
it
you.
Is. It is for me.
Isn't it easier to do it too, like when you have a good offensive line? Just in the sense of, I feel like you're gambling less.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. You know, it comes down to matchups, you know. And again, sometimes you think about matchups, like we go into games and, you know, sometimes O-line, D-line's a matchup, you know, do you have a matchup on a Mike linebacker? Do you have a matchup on a corner like that you like? And you're like, man, fourth and three, like, look at, would I rather throw the ball to Lazard or, you know, and knowing that they're going to play man coverage and I got one-on-one, like, we live that in K-State, you know, like, to be honest with you. Like, we live that, to be honest, you know.
We all did.
That was the right call, by the way.
Yeah, well.
We got that flag we needed.
Yeah, yeah. We thought we did for a couple seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, what a chip.
Yeah.
Are you the type of coach that on those calls you make the call, maybe it doesn't go well, and the game ends, especially in a loss, do you beat yourself up or do you move on pretty quick?
Yeah. Because I'm involved, you know, probably, you know, in the whole aspect of it and sometimes involved in the play calling aspect of it. I think you always naturally, you look back on how could I have done this better? How could I win or lose? Like, you go back and say, where did I not give our team the best opportunity to be successful? And that, to me, it's why I still love being involved in, like, the play calling and what's going on in the game, because I still feel like I can make a difference in a positive way for our football team to be successful. When I don't feel like that's happening, then, you know, then it's probably time to step away from some of those duties. But, like, that's the one thing I love about this sport. Like, you prepare, and I feel like, if you know me, like, we bump August 1st, like, we bunker in here, and, you know, like it's like you're not going to see us till January. And, you know, I love doing that. I love that mentality. But it's all for how do I give our kids the best opportunity to be successful. So do you beat yourself up on it? I think you do. And I think you're always going back, and at least I am. How could we, and especially me, have given either our coaches or our kids a better opportunity to be successful? Or, you know, what did we do well, and how do you remember that for the next time going forward?
Here, this is what I've kind of come to on this punting thing. Are you familiar with the foul or defend debate in basketball when you're up three at the end of the game?
Yeah.
Do you put them on the line or do you play defense? Right. Now, like, statistically, like the Ken Palms would tell you that it's a clear advantage. It's not a exorbitant advantage, but it is a clear advantage to foul. It's like 52% to 48% or whatever.
Under the theory they cannot tie the game.
But I guess like where I always come down on this is just because the analytics say it, in a margin that small, it doesn't mean it's better for your particular team. Yeah. Like, what if your team is – what if I'm Fred Hoiberg and I know my team better than anybody, and I know that we are a terrible perimeter defensive team, especially at the end of a shot clock.
Yep.
And like what Matt was just saying there, like he's looking at a matchup on a Mike linebacker. That's where I always come down to with the fans, which the passion's great and everything, but like these guys are sitting in here for 15 hours a day looking for that advantage over the Mike linebacker where, you know, we just don't know that. So I always try and give.
And I get the fan piece of it because I, like, you know, I love NBA basketball. Like, I'm sitting there, like, you know, I'm doing the same thing in those sports. So I get it and I understand it and I appreciate it. That's why none of that stuff bothers me outside of our walls, you know. But the reality of it is, you know, when you talk, you ask that question, like, how's those decisions really get made? Man, there's a lot of work, and we talk about those things. You know, it's a lot of time and effort, and ultimately it is my job, you know, to make that call, make that decision, go for it, not go for it, you know, not so much maybe what the exact play we're running on either side of the ball, but, you know, having a input on that is certainly my responsibility, and to do it or not to do it is my responsibility, and it's part of what comes with the gig, right? Like, you got to make those calls.
Am I onto something, though, on just, like, that every team's different, though?
I think it has to be, you know, and if just to say philosophically, we're doing this every time. I get it, and I get there's some of those guys out there, but I really think every game is different, and especially when winning in the margins and winning is especially at this, it is so, you're talking inches, right? It's four or five plays in a game that can dictate the outcome of it. Like, you know, it's a chess match, and you got to be prepared at all phases at all times because it's 60 minutes of literally chess that you got to be ready to play, and, mm-hmm. and you got to be play like that to be prepared to have success.
I think we talk a lot about business on the podcast, surprisingly, just being entrepreneurial, et cetera. My theory, I think Chris agrees with me on this. Yes, you're the head football coach, but I think CEO is more fitting because of all the hats that you wear. The phrase, the process, has become famous around here, obviously. You know, people say, what is the process? You've got your process. Everyone has their own process, et cetera. But my question is, which is a general one, it isn't a specific question, is you obviously have a process in place, but what is your take on how you do your job? You have so many obligations, stupid crap like this you got to do, right? You got players to manage. You've got, you know, donors, all the stuff that you got to do. Are you a big fan of delegation? How do you make it through your day doing everything that you need to do while still getting the football program to where it needs to be as well, which is obviously the most important part? Yeah,
I think that's a great question. And I think that's probably where you're always growing in our profession, and probably like any profession, we're constantly growing. And when you're running a business or you're running a football program, and to say you have all the answers is foolish, because I think experience helps you make you a better version of yourself. Failing and having successes and understanding the why those happen. So for me, you know, I am a big delegator in terms of hire great people, put great people around you that you trust. You know, from my own standpoint, it was the greatest transition that I had to make going from the offensive coordinator, where I remember, you know, when things got crazy, I could go back into the film room and it was like, I don't got to deal with those things, you know, to where now you deal with everything that touches the program. And I think the biggest thing you learn is time. You know, how do you manage your time, and how do you make sure that the time that you have is aligned in your program, and everybody else that's touching your program is aligned going in the same direction at the same time with the same vision that you have. And I think that's the one area that I've learned and really have grown. I feel like a lot in however many years I've been a head football coach. And it's the one thing that I really love to study and love to pour my time into is, how do I make us the most efficient, best version of ourselves that we possibly can be, with the understanding that everything we do in this program has to go back to those 130 kids that we have in our program, that's allowing them to have the best both student-athlete experience that they possibly can have to be the best they can be. And, you know, that's what I love about my job, because it's not pro sports. It's not like it's not business, even though everybody says it is business. And I remember as when my Pitt experience taught me this, like I hated my experience at the University of Pittsburgh, because I always felt like it was a business, you know, like there was just a lot of things going on. There wasn't a great culture there. And where I never want a kid to come in, like, this is 18 to 22 years old, and we remember that. It's mm-hmm. the best time of your life. And mm-hmm. it's hard, though. You're leaving home for the first time. You've got all these challenges that are coming at you. And, I mean, the growth that happens between 18 and 22 years old affect the next 40 to 50 years of your life. It's who you become and what you become. So my job on top of that is even bigger, that these parents are trusting me with their most prized possession.
Yeah.
And I'm responsible at the end of it. And so not only do we have to build this culture of all these other things that go on in my job, the number one thing that goes on in my job is I got to take care of those kids, and I got to make sure that I do everything in my power to let those young people grow to be the best they can be in every facet of their life, not just football.
So we had this conversation on the radio yesterday about the basically like the D League in basketball.
Yeah.
And like, we think that there's a lot of these young men that are going to be leaving early to go play in the G League now, because right. of the new rules and all that stuff. It's more of a developmental deal. Like, I think they should be able to do it if they want. But I also have a real concern, and what you were just saying made me want to get your opinion on it. You talk about 18 to 22-year-olds. Like, if I were 19, a sophomore in college, and somebody came to me and said, I'm going to give you $500,000 a year to go play basketball in Greece,
yeah,
that wouldn't have ended well for me. Like, I have a real concern about just – because, what, like 1% of those guys, less than 1%, are actually going to play in the NBA someday. I like the college football model where they've got to be on campus for 3 years because it – before you're just throwing them out and giving them millions of dollars. Like, I do think that there's some value to that.
I mean, and I think a little bit of it, let's look at the baseball model, you know, and some of these kids that get drafted and decide, like, I'd love to know the success rate, you know, of a high school kid leaving high school baseball and going and playing minor league baseball. And I agree with you. I wasn't ready for 18 years old for all of that. And I mean, you know, we're going through, especially today in our society, that we're dealing with kids today and what's going on at home and what are some of the challenges that some of these kids are coming from, that to say all of a sudden you're gonna grow up and be a man right now and be ready for this. Like, you know, you look back 60 years ago, they're going to the military, you know, and it was some version of growing up and learning sacrifice and team and how to handle yourself. And, you know, I it's the one thing I do love about my job, and I love about it's probably my greatest passion, is I get to come to work every day, and everybody looks football. You know what football does? It gives you a chance to impact young people, and it gives you I've always said this in our job, coaching is teaching and teaching is coaching, and it still gives me an opportunity to teach and to make a difference and make an impact and actually have relationships with our kids, not just say, man, I'm going to coach football today. And then that's my passion. You know, other people have different passions, but for me, that's the one thing I love about my job.
One follow-up, Coach, for back to the process again. The day that you took over, aside from the gift, here's my question. So you're now the head coach at Iowa State, okay? And you've got, I assume, all this vision for what you want to have happen, and you're excited about the opportunity. But you had to make a decision on something that you wanted to do first. You needed to take a first action to get the ball rolling. What was that first action? What did you think was the most important thing to do?
So that's a great question. You know, Everybody tells you a million things. And, you know, one thing that I had studied from afar was some of the actions when coaches had left to go to other places, what they do, how they do things. The first thing that I did before I even got here was who was on board from within Toledo that was ready to make this transition with me. And, you know, the day we touched down, I'll never forget, 10 o'clock at night, Sunday night, I come in here, Lou picked me up, you know, Coach Ianni, who had been with me at Toledo, was here. So that at least gave me a little bit of nugget of like what the heck was going on here. And Derek Hoosier, who's now on staff with me, was a GA. And Derek kind of went through the roster with me. We came in, it was like, I'll never forget, it was like 1 a.m. left, went through the roster here just so I could have a really good beat, because those guys that were coming with me from Toledo were coming in Monday night. The press conference was the next morning, and I had already set up before I had gotten here to meet with every person that touched this program all day Monday, in terms of former staff, the staff here prior to, and literally every academic person, every strength coach, everybody that touched the program, I wanted to have the opportunity to at least talk to. And, you know, I didn't know if we would have any positions on our staff. I didn't know what, but I wanted to at least see what the heck was going on here. What was their thoughts of what went well, what didn't go well, what was the reality? Because I think one thing you learn, at least that I learned from afar, that every situation, you have no idea really what went on there before, but you better know what went on so you can make the correct actions going forward.
Yeah.
And then after that, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I didn't touch recruiting. You know, I had hired our couple of our guys came with me from Toledo. I trusted them. I said, you go figure out what our moves got to be in recruiting. You know, we hired Golish. He drove over that night, was here Monday night. and, you know, what was going on with the past staff's recruiting. But for the next week, they stayed in this room and they figured out recruiting. And I etched out from 7 to 10 o'clock at night to make recruiting calls. But I met with every kid in the program Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I didn't go out on the road. Some of those guys did. And I wanted to hear from our kids. Number one, I wanted to know, you know, like, this isn't a cleaning out process, but there is going to be an accountability standard. But I at least wanted to know, who are these kids? Like, what? Why'd you come to Iowa State? I think I asked three questions. Why'd you come to Iowa State? What's going well? What's not going well? And I wanted to get an understanding of, why, number one, why'd you pick to come to school here? Maybe as a coach. Maybe it was a school. Maybe your parents went here. Number two, you know, tell me a little bit about what you think's going really good here, and tell me what's not going well. And that really helped me. You know, I think we had 2 weeks left in the semester, that week and then one more, and then everybody was going home. It at least gave me an idea of what the heck were we dealing with. What kind of issues? What were the challenges? So we're not coming out and here's the blueprint. This is what, because I had a lot of that, but some of it might not have fit. So when you unroll that blueprint, I wanted it to be 100% right on. And so, you know, I really didn't unveil that until they came back in January. You know, it kind of gave me a little bit of time to get fixed and get everything aligned the way it needed to be aligned. So when we came back, it really had to roll out and be right. So, but I think we had to make the right changes. You had to come in at least with the personnel, the alignment part, that had to get done first. And so staff-wise, you know, who was touching our players' lives, you know, who were we going to keep, who weren't we going to keep, what was that process going to look like? I felt like that was my responsibility to the program to get that done right away and to the process.
You manage all these people. I just read a book about this when I was in Florida.
I thought you were going to say, who's the worst one?
I'm going to let you coach me here, okay?
Yeah.
Because I feel like a major weakness I have is, like, I'm just very – you can ask my wife. I'm very focused on the task at hand, and I don't always, like, get out of my own little tunnel vision, right? And it's kind of like my way or the highway. And you can't do that in leadership.
Right.
Do you learn to be a good leader, or is it something that you're just born with? Like, have you had to evolve? Is it books you've read? Walk us through that.
I think it's certainly you're growing as a leader all the time. And again, I think it's one of those things where somebody says, "Man, I'm a great leader," and it's you get humbled really fast. You're constantly growing, whether it's experiences or whether it's failures or successes. But I read a lot. One of my greatest addictions is reading books, you know, and I'm constantly reading. And I think that part for me is part of my reading is how do I give back to the people around me? You know, I try to take that information and how can that better affect me where I can better affect our program? How can I be a better communicator? How can I be a better, you know, how can I be a better leader to our players? And how can I give back to them in some way, shape, or form? You know, that's how I use my reading, you know, in terms of that aspect of it. But, you know, I think from a leadership standpoint, I think we're constantly growing, you know, and again, that's where I always get amused where, you know, people think they have it all figured out. But, you know, as soon as somebody states that or feels that, they're humbled so fast, you know, where I think we're constantly growing in whatever we choose to do or whatever path we choose to take, there's constant growth. And once you stop growing, you know, it starts to go the other way for you.
Do you have a favorite book on leadership that you've read? I know there's a ton of them out there.
Yeah, you know, I think there was a book that really affected our program. You know, one thing that I do is I have our football team read a book every summer, and then we use that in fall camp. And you know, we've read some great ones, but last year, whether it was timing, situation, you know, we as a team, we read Chop Wood, Carry Water by Joseph Metcalf. Simple book, to the point, but really powerful. And really, it's about the process, and it's about the process to becoming successful. And I thought it was, you know, because sometimes you talk about these things, it's like, how can these kids hear or see it a different way, you know? And, you know, one thing we've done with, we do a lot of things with that, but you know, the neat thing now that I'm going to do is every freshman that's going to come in, we're going to start with that book. And as a matter of fact, our freshmen come in June 11th and they're going to read that. And I'm going to teach a leadership class with those guys over the summer, you know, and I do that with our own football team, you know, throughout the winter and in the spring and the summer with some of our leadership council. But I think just kind of trying to find different ways to align on the same message so kids have a great understanding of what is our culture stand for? What are we about? Like, what is this thing about? And, you know, yeah, winning and losing football games, it's really important. We all know that. Like, but if that's what we're focusing on, you're failing. You're going to fail. It's about winning and losing every day. And it's about how do I become the best version of me? And how do I develop really good habits for me to be successful? And that's why you've been successful in your business and Chris has been successful in his. And, you know, because I think the reality of it is we've created really good habits that allowed us to be successful. And how do you create those individually, you know, in a team setting, in a team sport that allows us to truly be the best version of us we can be? And it's a great challenge and it's unique.
Chris, are you successful? I don't. He just called you successful.
I'm still employed.
Can we?
Which is successful.
I know Coach wants to hang with us all day, but he's not going to.
Yeah,
so
we gotta get rolling.
Let me get through these other two things I want to do with you guys because I think they'll be a little bit of fun, and I think people want to know more about you.
Sure.
This one I call speed dating with Matt Kemp. Okay.
All right.
It's just designed to learn a little bit more about you. These are designed to be short answers. You don't need to go into great detail. Okay. And then you guys get in with a game against each other.
But I have to bring it up. I've brought it up to Matt a couple times. The guy at the Liberty Bowl did this to him about barbecue.
Yeah.
Like, but it was in front of like all the media.
What's your favorite barbecue sauce?
And Matt was so uncomfortable. He's like, "Do you like it dry?"
But the timing, right? Like, we got a game in like 24 hours, like barbecue.
You like it sweet and sassy or spicy?
Yeah, bad timing.
No barbecue sauce questions at all.
And better timing, so you're good.
Feel free to pass on anything you don't want to answer. That's fine too.
Know the room, Liberty Bowl guy.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
All right, here you go. And if you don't remember, some of these are older. First concert you went to?
U2.
That's not a bad first concert. Your first car, and did it have a name?
Oh, didn't have a name, but it was a favorite car ever. Ford Probe had flip lights, so I thought it was really cool. But only after about a month, only one of the lights flipped up, so it was like winking at you the whole time. So it's kind of how it went.
Those
Ford
were a really
Probe.
Big deal.
Yeah, those were, yeah.
When you were younger, let's say below the age of 13, which actress did you have a crush on TV?
Had to be one of the Saved by Kelly Kapowski, Saved by the Bell,
okay.
For sure.
That's going to tie into another question I got coming up later here.
All right.
A hidden talent we don't know about.
I'm boring. Gosh, I don't know. That's a great one. I guess I read. Yeah, I'm not football. You know, football and
you're
football
a good football
and
coach. Favorite current TV show.
Yeah, you know, I said this on the tailgate tour. You know, American Idol, I guess, is the one deal that I was watching with the Campbell kids. So we were into that. Big Maddie Poppy fans. We're still trying to. If you got any hookups, you guys, we're trying to get her to Jack Trice. So if we can make that happen,
man, if you
let's
can't
go.
Get that done,
I know. I'm working on it.
Man,
I can't believe you didn't say Monday Night Raw there.
I know that'd be my second.
What food could you not live without?
Oh, I'm a big chips guy. Like, I love chips and salsa. So, like, that's my weakness, chips and salsa.
Do you have any tattoos?
No tattoos.
I figured he had a junkyard dog on his back.
He might. Most famous person in your cell phone? And it's not Chris Williams. It better not be. That's the most famous in my cell phone. It's Chris Williams.
All right. Let's Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer. There you go. If you had to
That's
use
a good one.
Maybe you've done this. If you had to use a fake name, what would it be? Mine's Milford Okoboji.
What if Ron Mexico was the Michael Vick one, right?
Ron Mexico.
That was Michael Vick.
If you watch Modern Family, his is Clive Bixby. That's his fake name.
Michael Vick got like caught at like an airport under the name Ron Mexico when he was trying to like get away from the dogfighting thing.
Gosh, right. that's a good question. I'm going to have to go with, since he's not here anymore, I'll go with Tom Manning.
Tom Manning. Yeah. Okay. Which game show would you be best at?
I feel like Wheel of Fortune.
That's what I was thinking because of all the reading you do. First CD or tape you owned?
You know what? It was Summer 69, Bryan Adams.
I like that song. All right. We already know the answer to this next one. Saved by the Bell or Dawson's Creek?
Oh, yeah. Saved by the Bell.
Come on.
No, I did like 90210 a little bit.
That see, was, you're my man.
Yeah, I would like
1990 to 2000.
Great era. Great era.
You didn't like the over-dramatic crap that was Dawson's Creek, right?
No, it's too much for me. I never got
into
it.
You like to watch them go to the Max and
that's
have
it.
Burgers.
Yeah, the sideburns. Yeah, it was a great show.
Some of those episodes are so great if you look back on them now.
Yeah, I did watch that, though. I was a big fan of 90210.
I heard through the grapevine that you actually like politics a little bit, so here's a political one. Mm-hmm. If you could be the fly on the wall of any president, which one would you have picked?
Oh, boy, you'd love to be in there right now. Buddy.
I think it's pretty easy.
Right now would be an interesting time. But I don't know. That's a good question. Those war eras would be fascinating. I said one thing, if I've done coaching, you'd love to go to like the Naval Academy or to Army, and you'd love to have the opportunity to sit in some of those like – political classes. I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. I was history, political science. Jack Whitford, he's my hero right now. You know, like that guy's a rock star. I told him on Thursday, I was like, I'd love to switch jobs with you, see what the heck's really going on.
I think he would take you up on that.
He said that. He said that.
I think he would. All right, so that was a tough one. Favorite candy? Not chips and salsa. We need a real candy here.
Yeah, I'm probably a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup guy.
Okay. A couple more here. Starbucks, waste of money or totally awesome?
Waste of money.
Waste of money.
This needs a Maxwell House.
Would you rather know when you will die or how you will die?
Jeez. That got morbid really quick.
That's just an interesting philosophical question for people.
For me, it'd probably be when.
When?
Yeah.
Okay, and a total is not needed, but this tells a lot about you. How many times per month do you check your bank account online?
You know what? And this is a great story. I don't even know how somebody asked me that. I don't know how I get paid. I don't even know like what I get paid. I don't even know.
Everybody else does.
Somehow everybody else does. Like my wife literally, thank God, she pays our bill. Like I don't have.
She does it all.
She does it all. She's a rock star. I have no idea how any of that stuff works. I couldn't even tell you how to check my online bank account, to be totally honest with you.
I actually believe him. I don't think he does that a lot. All right. All right. Are you guys ready to play 5-second rule? Both of you are in on this.
Okay.
Five-second rule.
What's the
I'm gonna say name three things, and then I'll give you the category. But the key to this game is you gotta think quick. I got a clock right here.
All right.
You've got 5 seconds to answer. So chances are you won't be able to answer these, but you're gonna try, and that's the fun of it.
So we do it at the same time?
No.
Okay.
We'll alternate.
Okay.
All right, Chris. The first one's yours. Okay. I'll start the clock as soon as I'm done reading the question.
All right.
Three songs you sing in the shower. Go.
Regulators, My Maria, Check Yes or No.
Got it. Under 5 seconds.
Wow, that was really good. Regulators, a great song.
Yeah. Nice work.
Oranges and
I did have that as one of my early CDs too.
Did you? So. He's coming to Des Moines,
big time
next week. Is it Woolies? This little. I'm going.
Well, so that's right. Warren G's in Des Moines.
Yeah. Like, it can't be that many people there.
Yeah, no, heck no.
Regulators mount up.
And Nate Dogg's dead, so who's going to sing the hook? That's what I want to know.
They might get you in.
I'm down.
All right, Coach, you ready? I'll start you with an easy one.
Okay.
Ready? Give me three football penalties. Go.
Holding, pass interference, clipping.
Perfect. 2.43 seconds. Blasted those.
Come on.
All right, back to
the guy's wheelhouse.
Back to Williams. Ready? Right. This is also in Coach's wheelhouse. You should be able to get it. Name three ways to score in football.
Touchdown, safety, field goal.
Easy. 2.22 seconds. Easy. All right. Ready, Coach? Here's a tougher one for you. It's not tough, but name three journalists that cover Iowa State football. Go.
Randy Peterson, Tommy Birch, Chris Williams.
Almost beat you on the last one. That was fast. All right. Chris, you wouldn't know this because you're always doing your job. Three items sold at the concession stand at Jack Trice. Go.
Hot dog, a pretzel, and a soda.
Hey, we're going to count it. 3.75. You didn't have to be specific on it.
Okay.
All right, Coach, you ready?
Yep.
Three former Iowa State football coaches. Go.
Oh, man. Johnny Majors, Paul Rhodes, and Earl Bruce.
There you go. Okay.
He didn't say the most famous one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Chizik? Is that the most famous one? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Max on the top of Mount.
Yeah, you went older school than I thought there.
That was impressive because I actually thought the first thing that came to my head was that's not really fair because he doesn't, you know, he hadn't been around that long. But that's a good pull.
All right, Chris, this one's for you and then one more for each of you. Here you go. All right, Chris, get your thinking cap on.
Okay.
Three Iowa State athletic directors, go.
Vandeveld, Pollard, and the guy at Ohio State, Gene Smith.
Oh, just missed the 5 seconds, but you got the answer.
I said the guy at Ohio State. That counts.
All right. Ready, Coach?
Yeah.
It's Saturday morning. Three things you do before every game. Go.
Run, lift weights, and watch film.
4.35 seconds.
Even 11 o'clock kick?
Oh, yeah. Up at 4:30.
4:30 in the morning. All right, Chris.
Everybody hates those 11 o'clock kicks.
I
know that you guys like them.
Yeah, we get home at night.
Yeah.
This should have actually been a coach question because you spend enough time up here. Name three Ames restaurants. Go.
Old Chicago, Aunt Maud's, Old Main.
Got it. 4.15. You guys did good.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good game.
I went with the chain, though. Like that. I wish I would have given love to Wallabies,
you know,
something smaller.
But. Old Main. Did you say Old Main?
Yeah, I said Old Main.
So that's my question for you. Your favorite Ames restaurant. I want to know what you like.
You know, it's hard to go out with these Campbell kids. You know, like it's almost embarrassing. I go out there.
Isn't it a pain to take your kid out there?
Yeah, it's so much easier to order in. You know, now we do order in a lot. Order in, we kind of go. We got a good rotation of G'Angelo's. That's like a hidden gem in my
never
opinion.
Had that.
Oh. Right up by my in-laws.
Yeah, good spot. So Old Main, we'll do a lot, and then you know where else? Some Aunt Maud sometimes. The cafe. There's a lot of good spots.
Cafe is my favorite.
Hidden gem too. Yeah, everybody says great breakfast. I'm not a big breakfast guy, but yeah.
The thing about the cafe is. You never understand what the hell it is if you read their menu. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
It seems fancy.
But it's always good.
Yeah, it seems fancy. That's
like, I just told my wife,
it.
She's like, well, what is that? Just get it. You'll like it.
Yeah, we're not super adventurous, my wife and I, so, you know, we're kind of simple. But, yeah. Now, you're kind of like the ace in the hole on places. You got anywhere that we should be eating over here?
Well, what's funny is that Ames has changed a lot since I left. So a lot of people talk about, is it Provisions that's open up that was the same owner as the cafe, I believe? Mm. Haven't been there, but people have said good things.
What about that pizza place where the cheese is really thick?
Yeah, that's Great Plains.
Yeah,
Great
there you
Plains.
Go.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Did you put the honey on the crust?
No, we didn't do that. Now, some of our staff has done that.
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's the niche, right?
You know? But no, the ones that I like, Downtown Deli, that's been there my whole life. Yep. If you like subs, I mean, that's a really good
West
one.
West Side Deli?
No, Downtown Deli.
No, what's the one place? It's over by the barbershop.
No, it's West Side over there on campus.
It surprised me I only went there like once.
No, come on.
Ever. That was next to Monty's Barbershop.
I think of
Have you heard of Monty's?
Yeah.
Is Monty's still there? Or did Monty's close?
There's a barbershop on the corner there.
See, I grew up again in Ames, but I grew up with this folklore story, and I think it was true, that you go to Monty's because Monty's, you know how barbershops have magazines on the table. Monty's had Playboy. That was the story.
That's how you get college guys in there.
Yeah, but
the internet, like you.
The one I told you about, you said you like chips and salsa. I don't go there for this, but the real hint, Jim, is Taco Time.
Taco Time,
On Lincoln Way. It's the crisp meat burrito.
Yeah, you said that.
And then the cherry empanada. That's all you need to know.
How's the chips and salsa? Is it solid?
I'm not a salsa guy.
You're not a salsa guy.
I can't handle hot.
I got you.
At all.
Yeah.
People make fun of me for it. Like... People say, what do you get? Like, what's your wing at Buffalo Wild Wings? And sweet. That's it.
Asian zing, man.
Now, my wife likes that.
Yeah. I'm with you, though. I'm not a big spicy guy, but I do like a good salsa I like.
Campbell's just plain.
Yeah, I am.
Just give me the barbecue.
Yeah. Just not the day before the game, please. Yeah. That was a bad timing for that question. There was a couple of things that were awkward about that.
I was dying during that whole thing.
Yeah.
And then they made you stand up by the trophy.
Well, the first thing is we had a million press conferences, right? Like, do we have to have one more?
And I can tell you from our end, we didn't need to talk to you.
Right.
It was stupid because we talked to you like the 4 days prior.
Right.
And asked, like, there's really nothing for us to do the day before the game.
Right.
Like, it's all done. So then you were getting, like, just dumb questions from, like, media that didn't even know who you were.
Right.
Or what. They were just there because of the game, and they were planted there.
Yes.
It's just a bad situation.
Yeah. Aside from a great forecast, is that your least favorite part of the job? Having to do media press?
That's my, that's
your
fair.
Guys, your, my guys would tell you, yeah, I do I love doing that? No, it's not my favorite thing to do in the world. But, you know, I also get it. I get it. It's part of our job and part of my responsibility. So, you know, I'm fortunate that, you know, we do, most of the guys that cover us are really good. And I, you know, it's my obligation to our fan base too. And so I do get it. And I understand that. And I understand that responsibility.
Okay. My last question
this
is...
This will be the most listened to thing you've ever done.
My question is, do we or do we not get to 11 wins? Adam Gray. I don't know if Coach knows Adam Gray.
Is that the over-under?
Adam Gray says we're shoo-in for 11 wins this year.
As he, we're putting as he the over-under to 11.
Oh, yeah, jeez.
So what's Vegas? You would know this, Chris. What's Vegas have us at? Over-under. Six and a half?
Six is where it opened. It'll be up at 6.5.
You got, Coach, you got that easy.
Yeah. You know what's fascinating about this season? And I'm I just think it's such a fascinating time in our football programs. You know, how do you handle success from a year ago? How do you handle some small victories? How do you handle some of those gut-wrenching failures? Like, it's a really interesting time with this team. And, you know, one of the things that I told our football team right after the game, because I knew now all of a sudden you've won in a place where the consistency of winning hasn't occurred yet, right? We haven't gotten to that point. That's when you got a program, when you're consistently having success. And, you know, I think one of the challenges that comes with that in trying to get to that consistency mark, that's when it's special, is how do you handle expectations? How do you handle, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, last year there weren't any expectations. Like, you know, and that just the reality of it is, and now – all of a sudden, you've shown that you can do things in a really positive way. How do you handle that? And I think it's a great challenge for this year's group and our senior class and our team, our coaches, because the way it gets derailed is ego. All of a sudden,
sure,
you know, and it can happen with coaches, it can happen with players, it can happen with anybody. Like, all of a sudden, I think that I'm the one that I'm the reason it happened, or you're the reason it happened, or this is the reason it happened. Like, the reason it's happened is because we're all together, and we had the ability to be the best team at times, and at times when we needed to be the best team, we weren't. And can we learn from those mistakes of where we weren't, and can we take how we did when we did it well, and can we really continue that process going forward? And so I really look forward to this dynamic and this challenge, because it's where you want to be in your program. You want to have expectations. You want to have people excited about the season. You want to have the opportunity to be able to sustain success for the long haul. So it's a really interesting time, and it's a great challenge for this team.
I'm going to kick myself if I forgot to ask one last question, because it is relevant in the news.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you have no control over this whatsoever. Sports gambling is going to be legalized in Iowa.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. As a football coach, leading players on the field that are somewhat susceptible historically to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Does it concern you at all, or not a big deal?
Yeah. I probably, the failure for me is I haven't put enough total thought into that, because I haven't, the specifics of that haven't been, you know, divulged. But the reality of it is, you know, I was part of a Toledo program when we had come in that had been, they had gone through an issue with gambling. So,
oh, really?
The FBI had been involved. That was prior to us being there. So,
yeah.
I think at least being educated on how gambling can affect a program, the downfalls of it, the challenges that are around it. I think I see it as another teaching moment. It's another opportunity for us to educate and teach our kids, which I think will be great educational opportunities. But do I think it'll certainly bring up a different teaching moments and different situations that we're going to have to go through as head coaches? I definitely think so. And to say we're going to ignore it or we're not going to care that it's going on, I think it's like anything that's going on right now, you know, in our world. Like, if you don't think your 18 to 22 year olds are on it or aren't seeing it or aren't involved in it, then you're missing the boat. Like, they're seeing everything. Twitter's telling us everything every second of the day. And
sure,
you better be having real life conversations with your football team, or I think it's a real failure.
Coach, I hope you somewhat enjoyed this.
I did. I appreciate you guys coming up.
We appreciate the record ratings that I'm sure this will get. We don't even know what the record is, but this one's going to be it.
We'll have good numbers.
We'll have good numbers.
All right. We'll be back normal next week, right?
I think so.
All right.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks so much for having me.